Struggling with your faith? You're not the only one. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Well, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. Again, folks, you are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and we're live right here in Southern Ontario, Joy 1250. I hope everything's streaming nicely on the site. Sometimes we get calls from Finland, from Australia.
Salmon River.
And Salmon River, BC, by golly. Yeah, people listening all over the place. We had a lot of people kind of contact us last week when we had the Bay City Rollers on. That was kind of strange. It's fun because, you know, I used to be a fan of them as well.
Thanks again.
I try to book all the cool guests when Tim's not around. Sorry you weren't here, Tim.
It's all right.
I'm trying to train you not to leave.
All right, there you go.
Well, listen, when I started this show 13 years ago, there was a part of me that was innately frustrated with hearing people's stories at church. I mean, I like story time at church. I'd rather have that than some preacher rattling on about stuff. But the stories I always heard were, I used to be bad, then I found Jesus, now I'm good, and everything's peachy. And I don't know, it didn't sit well with me because, again, innately, I kind of knew that wasn't true. I know enough about people to know that nobody's squeaky clean, especially Tim. Just follow him around for a few days and so I said, I'm going to have people on the show whose lives are not squeaky clean. I'm going to have people on the show who are struggling. I'm going to have the people on the show who, gone through so much stuff and you know, they're looking upwards going, really? Really? Is there anything else you want to throw my way? Like, what the heck? So a friend of mine named Bev Farrell suggested I reach out to this lady sitting beside me. Her name is Katarina McLeod. She is a survivor of exploitation, sexual and physical abuse, drug addiction, kidnapping, domestic prostitution, and trafficking. But you don't have that on your Lava Life profile, do you?
Definitely not.
In 2008, she finally escaped the game and now works to raise awareness regarding the truth behind the industry as well as walk alongside women who, like her, want to start over and realize they can't do it on their own. Katarina also has a young friend, a young lady with her. Today, and we'll talk to her in a little bit. But first of all, Katarina, thank you for being here. I know you've been interviewed lots and lots of times.
Yes.
What's the typical question people ask in every time you've been interviewed?
How am I here? How am I still alive?
Right.
How am I here?
And what do you take that to mean, like, why haven't you taken your life? Is that what people are saying?
Yeah, I think that's, through the violence that I suffered, how wasn't I killed, or through all the mental damage, like, how didn't I commit suicide?
Right.
So people always want to know, like, how are you here today? You're strong. You seem normal. You seem like you have it together.
I'm sorry, they said you seem normal?
Yeah, I seem normal.
That's not why I invited you on the show.
And it's so far from the truth. I mean, there's so much damage still. From everything that I've went through. I mean, I still see a trauma therapist every week.
Right.
Right? So this is an ongoing process that probably for the rest of my life, there's going to be some deep scars.
Do you think that there is something about certain people that attracts bad?
Yes.
More bad than other people?
Yes.
Are you one of them?
I'd like to hope I was one of them, and I'm not now.
And you're not now.
I think that when we have things happen to us throughout our lives that are not good, that it kind of puts, this worthlessness on us, or we don't feel that we're good enough. And there's people who are predators, and we're vulnerable, and we fall for all that lie. And
why did you fall for it?
Fall for what exactly?
The predators, the lies, the traps. How did you get sucked in?
You know what? it was looking for that father figure for me.
Sorry to sound crass, but you had daddy issues.
I had daddy issues. I had been sexually abused as a child. So I had been groomed very young to think that that's the way that men behaved and that's what men wanted. And I would have sex with them or they would force me to have sex with them. Mm-hmm. So I learned very quickly when I wanted the dad who wasn't around that I could get attention sexually. Mm-hmm. So I used my sexuality.
I just realized that I probably should say, kind of, look, it's the right thing to do. If I had young kids and I was listening to the show, I'd be like, whoa. So if you've got young kids, don't listen to our show right now because we aren't going to candy coat stuff. And you may not want your youngins to hear this. So turn on Q107. that was Is your dad still alive?
He is.
Would he hear this?
I don't know. I don't speak to my dad.
So you have no relationship with him?
None. None whatsoever.
For how long?
It's been about 6 years, maybe seven.
Oh, that's fairly recent.
Yes.
That things have been severed?
Yeah, I severed them.
Why?
Because I would try to get his approval for stuff. I know my dad was very ashamed. He knew that I was in the sex industry. He knew that I was this wild child who did drugs and all kinds of stuff. He was very unemotionally supportive. So it was like he would pay attention to me if I was doing the things he wanted, joining, you know, Taekwondo or going to church or doing those things. And other than that, he would always disappear on me. And it was such an emotional roller coaster that I finally was like, forget it. You're not worth it.
What's the worst thing that your dad, I was going to say did to you. That's not where I was going. But, you know, what caused you the most hurt when it came to dad? Expectations?
That he wasn't a father. He didn't teach me wrong from right. He didn't protect me. He didn't teach me that men abusing women were wrong. I can remember being older, probably around 12 years old, and going to my father and saying that I had been getting raped as a little girl, and his response was, well, you must have done something to deserve it.
And that's such a typical response from what I hear.
Right, right. So that really stuck with me, and I really felt a lot of self-hatred and blame for that. So he didn't protect me in the times that he would see my boyfriends abuse me. He knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. He knew I was a sex worker. He wasn't a dad. He just was not what a father I think should be.
Do you remember when we spoke on the phone and you went through the litany of nasties that have happened in your life?
Yes.
Remember that? It was like a Tommy gun of
right
bad stuff.
Right.
Can you do that again?
Okay.
Ready?
Yep, ready.
Ready, Tim?
I'm ready.
Okay, ready. So raped at 5, continued for 3 years, parents got divorced. I went buck wild, started having sex at 12, men twice my age, doing drugs, drinking, cutting. I ended up into Wiccan, Satanism. I ended up pregnant at 14, couldn't take care of her. I had no life skills. My mom took care of her. I went on my way, met another man at 17 who was very, very violent and was in and out of jail all of the time. And the last time he went to prison, he had asked a friend of his to keep an eye on me. And this friend took it upon himself when my husband at the time was moved to a halfway house to kill him. And he killed him and took me with him after the fact to bury the body. And then basically held me prisoner for 3 years out of fear and violence. And I was groomed into the sex industry through a woman in a support group for women who had been abused. And that was something that the murderer wanted me to join in order to deter the police. So I did, and a woman offered me a job. She had owned a brothel, and she offered me a job, and I took it. And I took the job thinking that I could save enough money to get out of the situation that I was in. And it didn't turn out like that. It left to 15 years of me spiraling down in drug addiction and working out of my car, out of my house, out of apartments, you know, out of strip joints wherever I could, and having kids in the process. And then meeting a pimp and getting hooked up with him, who ended up having 2 children with him, and he ended up having 8 other children and a wife, and then he was raping my daughter. So It was just a crazy, insane life of constant drugs and abuse and violence, to where I just finally was at a point where I was going to commit suicide. I had tried many, many, many times. And that's 90% of my tattoos are hiding up, you know, cuts and cutting marks and all of that.
Wait, you
stuff.
Have tattoos?
Just a couple. Yeah, I have 91. I have 91.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your, no, the litany of things. Were you at the end?
Well, I mean, the end was me finally getting out through a customer offering me an out, and I took it.
Like a Julia Roberts scenario?
Yeah, definitely like that, but
do you have a red dress?
I do have a red dress. Should I have worn it today?
No.
I'm wearing red shoes. So he took me out, but I was still very damaged, still doing drugs, but started advocating for women. And then 3 years later, he left me and I had nothing. So I was going to go back into the industry. And it was through my eldest daughter's youth workers, youth leaders in the church, who offered me help.
So your daughter was going to church?
My daughter was going to church. She was, I call her my prayer warrior. For the whole time I was in the industry, she would like tape little notes on my door about how much I was loved. And, you know, I was the kind of mom who would come home and be throwing up everywhere and drugged out. And my kids would be holding my hair up and cleaning me up. And I was very verbally abusive to them. I hated them. So, I mean, they lived a life of complete hell with me. Hmm. And, yeah, so I took the money from the youth leaders in the church, and that's where everything began for me.
How many children do you have?
Four.
Do they all like you?
They do now.
Do they?
Now. It's been a bumpy road. There's a lot of therapy with my kids. It's, you know, it's been really hard. There was a lot of hatred there of, you know, I wasn't available for them. Hmm. I was a horrible mom. I put men before them all the time. And since I've been out of the industry and trying to get my life back together, things have come back together with me and my children. And we do have good relationships. They're still rocky at times.
Sure.
But we're working through it.
How old are they?
I have a 13, a 15, a 24, and a 29-year-old. Yeah.
Hmm. I have a lot of questions.
Okay, shoot.
People don't really change. What do you think of that saying?
I don't believe that. I don't believe that one bit.
Because in order to go through what you went through, there has to be a fair bit of survivor in you.
Yes.
And part of that surviving mechanism, when not processed healthily, turns into narcissism.
Right.
So it really is all about you.
Right.
What? I don't even know what the question is. Are you a narcissist? No.
No.
How do you know that you're not as selfish as you used to be?
Because I feel for the first time in my life. I have empathy. I'm sober. I'm clear-minded. I'm in trauma therapy. And I'm helping others the best that I can. There's no selfishness in me.
What was your preferred choice of medication? Medicating your you know, numbing yourself?
Well, I was addicted to opiates and crack cocaine and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you took?
Probably Percocet.
Right.
Yeah. I was up to 15 a day of those.
Dude, so. I can't do one without hurling.
I would be hurling. So between that and like Xanax, those were my biggest addictions.
Mm-hmm.
I was just existing. I was just functioning. I wasn't living. I didn't know how to live. I was in survival mode. It was fight or flight since I've been a little kid. Those are the kinds of things that I learned, was how to kind of numb yourself just to stay alive. And that's what I did for all those years. And now, I mean, the hardest thing, and I know that this with dealing with women as well, that I help, is feeling. You know, we numb ourselves so we don't have to feel the pain of the things that have happened to us. So, you know, my motto is you have to feel to heal. And that's the hardest thing to do. It was the hardest thing for me to do, was to feel anything.
Do you have a man in your plan?
I don't have a man right now, but I'd like to have a man in my plan, yes, if any eligible Christian men are out there.
Now, hold on. This brings me to a point. I wasn't going to chat about this, but I was chatting with someone the other day who's actually going to be a guest on our show next week. And she became a Christian later in life.
Right.
And then and she'd already kind of divorced, you know, I was out of the way, became a Christian. And then it's sort of like this, she found a really great guy, and he was a Christian, so she signed off real quick on this dude.
Yeah.
And dude turned out to be a bit of a D-bag, right? And
yep.
I've heard this story so many times.
So have I. Especially with a lot of girls who have been in the industry who do come out and find boyfriends, they want that good Christian man, and
yeah,
they've turned out to be psycho.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think through therapy, you learn what intimacy really is supposed to be.
Right.
I had no clue. I'm still kind of don't have a clue. I do, but I don't. I'm working through those issues. And for us women who've been through what I've been through, we think that sex is love. So
how does that change? Come on.
How does it change that? You know, I've learned that intimacy is beyond just sex. You know, intimacy is having a relationship with somebody, communicating, sharing thoughts and desires with that person, cuddling, you know, it's time. It's not just, oh, we're having sex and boom, you love me, you know, so it's taken a long time to get there in my brain. To understand that that's just not the way men are.
How are you going to fix your daddy issues when you and daddy aren't fixed?
You know what? I go to a therapist and I talk about my daddy issues. I've forgiven my father. And just because you forgive somebody doesn't mean you have to talk to them or hang out with them.
No.
And I choose not to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still, there's still healthy boundaries that need to be involved. As much as it depends on you, be at peace with everyone.
Right.
And as much as it depends on you, be a piece of everyone. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to. I'm thinking about the 12-step groups, you know,
right,
and where you go
right.
And there you have to ask for forgiveness, you know. Blah, blah, blah. Well, there are some scenarios you should not have any contact with that person.
That's right.
And that's, I think, what you're sort of saying. Maybe? No?
I won't have contact with them. Like, I've wrote victim impact statements for my therapist to go through, but sometimes it's better to just not open up that box again and move forward. And that's what I've chosen to do.
Do you think there's a God?
Yes, I do. I do. Now I do.
But even when you're in the bad stuff, in the darkness, darkest of dark.
Yep.
Romeo Dallaire, who we've had on the show before, who led the UN peacekeeping mission during the Rwandan genocide. Here's a guy who could have saved almost 1 million lives, but the UN told him to stand down and watch, traumatized by this thing,
right,
as you can imagine. But when he shook hands with the leader of the bad group of people,
right,
he said it was like shaking hands with the devil. Just an evilness penetrated, right? And because of his experience with evil, that's what led him to really believe there was a God.
Right.
I'm wondering about your experience with evil and how that ties in with your God stuff.
You know, when I was a little girl, I was exposed very young to the church. My father was involved in the church, so we were like dragged there every Sunday. And I had learned about this almighty, powerful God, and I fell in love with him very quickly. But when I started to get raped, I thought it was a fairy tale, because where was he, right? If he had all this power, well, why wasn't he saving me? And I want to believe I could hear whispers from God as a little girl. And even as I was going through things in my life, there was just something that wouldn't let me die. It wouldn't. Like, every time I tried to commit suicide, somebody would find me, or something would happen, or, you know, on the darkest days, I would drive home and be screaming at this God that I wasn't even sure existed, because evil to me was more profound. You know, I started, you know, dabbling in witchcraft and stuff like that, and I felt that. I felt that evil. I felt angry, and, like, I wanted to hurt people. That was more real to me than anything good that I had ever, you know, came across in my life, which was nil at this point. So I think what did it for me more than anything was watching my daughter's faith. Watching this little girl who continually prayed for her mom, who believed in her mom. Like, where did this come from? And when I finally broke and decided to give my life to God was through Alpha. I felt obligated to go to church because these people gave me money.
Explain to our listeners, because many of our listeners wouldn't have a clue what Alpha is.
Christian 101. So, you know, I went into Alpha to prove that Christ was just like every other man that I had come across.
So this is a course that a church may offer to
right.
introduce you to Christianity.
Right. What is Christianity? Who's
and you
Jesus?
Signed up for a course on Jesus?
I only did because the woman who had lent me the money, who is now my mentor, I felt obligated. And she was like, oh, if you go to Alpha, I'll go to Alpha, not realizing she'd been in the church for 20 years. So I felt obligated to go, and I did. And for 9 weeks, I went asking the most inappropriate questions. And people's mouths, instead of dropping, would be like, well, Katarina, in the Bible, it says this. Like, they were so opening and loving. And I started to want what they had. And in the ninth week of Alpha, I left there suicidal. I was going to kill myself. And I was driving and looking at poles that I could drive into. How fast could I go to, you know, die? When I kept hearing this voice in my head that said, just give me a chance. That's all I kept hearing. And I finally pulled over the car and I said, okay. I knew that voice from being a little girl. And I said, fine, God, if you're real, you're going to change my life. And that void that I tried to fill my whole entire life through sex, through drugs, through men, through material, through whatever, was instantaneously filled.
No.
Yes, it was. Oh, yes, it was. There was a peace that overcame me that I've never experienced in my life. And I'm not saying that I don't have issues now. Oh, I have issues.
That's what I've heard.
My life is not, thank you. My life is not all like peaches and cream. Mm-hmm. I still struggle and I still go through hell. And I'm still like, God, are you joking? Like, are you kidding me? Enough is enough. So I like to believe that God and I have this really personal relationship where I can talk to him like I would talk to you and yell at him like I would yell at anybody and be angry with
him. You wouldn't yell at me.
I don't know. Maybe I would.
I do.
Okay, so this sounds like one of those stories, testimonies that get shopped around in the Christian Speakers Bureau.
It does.
And to be honest, I don't know if I buy them all, and they irritate me a little bit.
Are you saying I'm irritating
well,
you?
Well, sometimes I don't word things properly.
Yeah, nice.
Is it real?
It is real.
See, hold on.
Okay, hold on.
So I have the spiritual gift of pessimism.
Oh, great.
It's not a real thing. But, and so I would say that, when you've been clean 10 years or when you, I don't know, right? There's a kind of a durational thing here, mm-hmm. you know, we'll mm-hmm. see. It's a we'll see thing. And unfortunately, right. Jesus people are go one way or the other. They either go, oh, look at you. You're all bad looking with tattoos. Let's right. put you up on this church stage and right. tell your story. And they shine too much shininess mm-hmm. on you. And then that actually brings darkness in a weird kind of background right. way, backdoor way. And then there's the other people that cross their arms, look at you and go, yeah, we'll see.
Right. And you know what? We'll see. We'll see. I mean, I have been sober for about 4 years. Like I said, when I first came out, I was still dabbling. I struggle. I still get angry. But I'm not who I was. And who I was a very dead, angry, violent woman.
But I don't understand practically... Let's see, how do I ask this question? This is my first radio show I've ever done. How have you changed? Let me just answer the question I just asked.
Okay, answer.
Some people will say, well, the Holy Spirit came into me and I'm a new person and God, totally fixed me and healed me or whatever. I still struggle. Da, da, da. There's that answer, right, Tim? That's one.
That's good.
Another one is... I'm choosing daily to believe stuff God says about me rather than the lies I believe about myself. Mm-hmm. I like that one personally. It's kind of a cool one.
That's you, bro.
Yeah. I don't know. What? Practically? Because you hear people all the time doing, oh, I found God. The prison stories, right?
It was never like that for me. It wasn't like, oh, I found God and now my life completely changed. It was the mentorship that changed me. It was the people who have walked beside me for the last 4 years who have given me hope and
okay,
changed
so
me.
Maybe people changed you. Maybe love of people changed you. Maybe
they
it was
did,
just
but
nice
they,
people being nice to you, and that's what changed you.
But they were people of God. They are people of the church.
So the math is, if God people do nice things for you, then it's God doing it.
I definitely believe that. Yeah. I believe, it was a fluke for the mentors that I have to be put in this situation. I mean, they're my spiritual parents now. Mm-hmm. I call them mom and dad. And, she's a librarian, this woman whose life was pretty boring from what she'll tell me. And she has gone through hell and back with me, of me falling off the wagon.
I'm sorry. It's hilarious that your spiritual mentor is a librarian.
She is. She is. Very, very calm, woman who you know, all of a sudden she's got this drug addicted, you know, crazy chick who's flying off the handle. Mm. And she just loved on me. She just totally loved on me, no matter how many times I hurt her or disappointed her.
Been to A to Z.
Really?
Hey, you're getting all the good lines so far.
All right, let me just bring people up to speed again. If you've just tuned in, first of all, you're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. And a while ago, I was thinking, we've been too cerebral lately, which is kind of bizarre considering who's hosting the show. But it's just been too thinky, you know what I mean? And we've missed the heartbeat in the show for a while. And so I reached out to a few people and said, you know, who should we have on? And Bev Farrow, good friend, said, you need to get Katarina on. She's a rock star. So Katarina McLeod is a survivor of exploitation, sexual and physical abuse, drug addiction, kidnapping, domestic prostitution, and trafficking. Can we just go to the trafficking thing just for a second? Because
sure.
That might be a nice segue into the next
right.
person in the room.
So
I don't know why I'm talking like that.
Yeah. To the next person. So, you know, being in the sex industry, especially if you have a pimp or you're working for people, they'll move you from place to place. So kind of throughout the city, different hotels, that kind of stuff.
And that's trafficking?
That's trafficking.
See, that's not the thing that people get in their brain when it comes to trafficking. It's like, really, you're from here in Ontario and you were trafficked? Where were you trafficked to? Zimbabwe?
Right. So a lot of people think that it's trafficking abroad. So you have to come from another country and be trafficked here. That is not what trafficking is. It's anybody who is holding you against your will and moving you from hotel to hotel, city to city. And controlling you. That's what trafficking is here in Canada. Mm-hmm. That's what human trafficking is. So, you know, that's where, you know, I went through that kind of stuff. And that's where we can move on to.
Would you like to introduce this young lady to your left, please? Mm-hmm. Are we whispering? We're whispering.
Yeah, I'm whispering. Okay. So this young lady is, she's a darling. She was the first girl that I've ever worked with helping. Mm-hmm. And we have been working together, you know, I've been mentoring her and helping her for, oh my gosh, 6 years now, on and off.
And by the way, I just want to say this, if you want to use, I don't know about an anonymity and all that kind of
stuff. I just asked her that.
First name, last name, or fake name, I don't really care. I just need something to say other than, hey, you.
Do you want?
First name's fine.
So, her name is Marky.
Hi, Marky.
Yeah.
Hello.
Marky, you know, you heard this lady's story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something about the whole scene of, hey, I've got a bad story, too. And there's almost a weird one-upmanship thing that happens, right? Oh, well, you were trafficked here. I was trafficked. I don't know. Whatever. And I certainly, I mean, I'm sorry. It sounds like I'm making light of this. But do you know what I mean? Like, there's
different stories for sure.
Yeah.
But I think every story is original. And trafficking comes in all different forms, and everyone has their own story. So
I want to know yours.
All right. Well, I grew up Christian, in a Christian home for 16 years, and then my mom left when I was 16, and that kind of tore up our family a bit.
Spiral.
Yeah. So that was a spiral. When I was 16, I was gang raped, so I think my self-worth kind of went down a bit. And then when I was 19, I started working in a bar, and I met this girl, and we became friends quickly. We went out for drinks, and I felt like I could trust her, and she invited me out for her birthday. She lived in Mississauga, and she seemed like she had an awesome life and whatnot. She had money, and I was like, I really want to be friends with this girl. So she invited me to her birthday. We went out and then slept over at her house, and the next day she drove me to a strip club, and we're in the parking lot. I'm like, what are we doing here? And she said, I owed her for gas money because she came to pick me up. I live in Hamilton. So she came to pick me up, and she's telling me I owe her for the car rental, telling me all these things I owe her for. And I felt guilty, and I didn't have the money. And she's like, it's okay. Like, you'll go in here, you'll work for the money, and then we'll be square. So she was a threatening person. So I felt like I had to. So she said, you know, make $500 and we're good. So she gave me clothes. She gave me all these things. She's like, go in, speak to the manager, everything. So club was dead. I had to make that money. So I ended up sleeping with someone that evening. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of started it all. So every day she would drop me off at the club when it opens, pick me up when it closed. It was long, long days, long nights. And she just had like a mental like hold on me. And I was, you know, nervous. She told me people were watching me at the club. Like I had people check up on me. So I felt like I couldn't really escape it. Mm. So that's how it all started.
Man. That sucks.
It really did suck. Yeah. Wasn't the best time.
No. Where was your worth before it really went down the toilet? Like, was it there or was it never there?
Mm.
Was there ever a time you look back in your life and go, yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was okay. I had to get a little bit of self-worth, or was it always kind of shaky?
I had some self-worth when I was a kid, but I was always insecure. Like, I never felt like I truly fit in.
Why?
I don't know. I was a shy girl. My mom never paid attention to me. So I don't have daddy issues like Kat.
Issues, yeah.
I have mommy issues.
Yeah.
So I never really belonged in my family. So it kind of went elsewhere.
Is your mom in your life today?
She isn't. Yeah, she's in the picture. I see her on holidays. You know, it's not a good relationship, but it's there.
Yeah, if she was listening right now, just think that through for a second. So she's listening right now. What does that feel like?
Weird, but you know what? I wouldn't even care because it sounds cold, but she's hurt me so much, and I think she still needs a reality check. Like, she knows everything I've been through, and she hasn't asked me about anything. She hasn't comforted me. She puts it under the rug. She just wants, like, the perfect life, you know, just sweep it away. So if she
were you swept away because you didn't fit into her perfect life?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that she's dealing with some kind of whatever so much that that when you came along and gave her grief or, I don't know, whatever, you didn't fit into her thing, she just couldn't deal with it because of her own stuff?
Yeah, I think she clearly had issues before she met my dad and right. before everything. And that in a way, I feel like she was kind of jealous of my relationship with my dad.
Okay.
So she, you know, comforted my sisters more than me. Yeah. And, yeah.
So obviously part of your story is the growing up in church stuff that I kind of twig on, right? I kind of go, what?
Yeah.
Did that play a role in, well, hold on, let me ask you, when you look back on your time, you know, in the church family, mm-hmm. do you look back on it and go, oh, that was nice, we were a church family? Or do you see hypocrisy? What do you see when you look back on the church stuff? Was it a big deal in your life?
No, it wasn't.
So you were forced to go, you just did the thing.
Yeah, I feel like I was there since pretty much birth, so it never really gave me a mind of my own. So it was kind of like I was trained to believe, but I really didn't know what I believed.
Right.
Or.
At the risk of getting a little melodramatic, right, the gang rape thing is something that obviously stands out massively in your story.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to other people who have been gang raped, and a couple of people have said, I just had to go somewhere else in my mind. I had to go somewhere else. And I remember one person saying that they kind of went, they pretended they were going with God or to heaven or something like that. And then somebody else would say, no, I was looking up at the sky going, dude, seriously, I'm getting gang raped here. You're God. What are you doing? Are you sleeping? So,
well, to be honest, those thoughts never crossed my mind because I was given the date rape drug and a video surfaced of it.
Oh, man.
And that's how it happened. So I don't know. I mean, God always pops in my mind. He's definitely there when I don't want him to be, but he does. He pops there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So what do you think about this lady's Jesus story, you know?
I love it.
It's kind of trippy, isn't it?
It is trippy because I see myself in her and, yeah, I see God working through her to get to me and I'm trying to fight it off, but it's working.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
You know, I think maybe something that should scare you, Katarina, but also, Mark, you should kind of be twigged on this as well, is I know this sounds so silly, so infantile, but she's not God.
Right.
Let's all say duh at the same time. No, but she's going to be your Jesus with skin on kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. she's like the person who's introducing you to getting out of the lies that you believe about yourself, your worth, shaking off your past, we're processing it, all the whole thing, and moving forward and rising up. And part of her story is the God stuff, mm-hmm. and so she's the connector between you and the God stuff. And a lot of people attach the God stuff to the person who's introducing them to the God stuff, and then when the person who is introducing them to the God stuff tanks or does something goofy or wrong, No, I'm not saying that's going to happen. Sorry, but there's no question that Katerina is flesh and blood, and she's already admitted numerous times that she's a jerk sometimes.
Right.
I sin all the time. And I think, there's a savior complex that comes
yes,
across, right?
Right.
And I get girls all the time who literally, like, I'm their lifeline. And, they all call me Mama Cat. But I do not push anything that I believe down the girls' throats. I don't.
Hold on.
No.
Yeah, no. She's never once brought it up. I see it through her.
There's like, you do not have to read your Bible and sing and go to church if I'm mentoring you. That is your decision to whatever you want to do. I do not do any of that stuff.
What if Marky wants to become a Buddhist?
Then she can. I'll still support her. I love her without judgment. And that's what it is. I'm not here to get her to become a Christian. If that happens, that's a bonus. I'm here to help her.
But isn't your risingangels.net thing, Jesus organization?
We are faith-based, yes we are, but we're not one of these organizations that it's mandatory for you to be a Christian or mandatory for you to believe in God for me to help you. No.
But you really, come on, down deep, you'd love her to...
Oh, I would definitely love her...
Go to take the route you took, because that worked for you.
I would definitely love everybody to come to know Christ, definitely, but you know what? That's not my mandate. My mandate is to help her and keep her alive, and to teach her how to be able to function with all of the damage that's happened to her. That is my mandate. And if the bonus is that through me, she sees the things that have happened to me through my story, and she just decides somewhere along the way, then hey, that's great. Hmm. I do have girls who are total atheists, and they will once in a while, after being around me or talking with me or whatever, say, can you just pray with me? Hmm. And I will.
I would not want that pressure of being the example of faithy stuff.
Well, I don't think I'm an example, because I still struggle and I still fall, and I'm very honest with my girls.
But they look up to you. There's a Messiah complex thing that's gotta be careful of.
I'm definitely have to be careful of. So I'm also a realist, and I'm also non-filtered. I don't have a filter still to this day.
I do appreciate a little filter on our show.
Well, I'm totally filtering it right now.
We have problems sometimes.
But, I'm rough around the edges, right? And, for me, God's loving me where I'm at, and I'm doing the best that I can. Do I sin? Yes, I sin. Do I, still mess up? Yes, I mess up. But I'm human. I'm human. So that's what it boils down to. I know what forgiveness means. And I ask for that. I don't go out and intentionally do bad things.
Who's hurt you the most?
Oh my gosh, that's just really hard. I think I don't even know. So many people have hurt me. There's things that I still that hurt me really bad when I think about my past. Things that I still have to work through. I mean, that would be my father, my mom. My mom, I feel like she wasn't there to protect me, so I have a hard time with that. And probably the man who I had children with, who ended up raping my daughter, the guy who was the pimp. So that's probably the biggest hurts for me.
How's your daughter with everything? Wait, is this the daughter that was raped by... was it your husband at the time?
No. Okay. So it was a pimp.
Okay.
It was a pimp I was working for.
Was that the daughter that started going to church and stuff?
Yes. She was already going to church. So I had actually brought her to church in hopes that I could connect with my father again. Hmm. I went into this church. She came with me. I dragged her along. And I left feeling horrible, and she stayed. And she got saved. Hmm. And this rape occurred a couple of years later. And she was the one who kept praying, and it did shake her faith in that sense of where she started to, feel very dark, and she went through things, and, I wasn't sure if I believed her. Part of me was like, "You're just trying to ruin us." I was a mess. She was a mess. Took a long time to repair our relationship, but now, she has brothers that are, from the guy who raped her. Her brothers are from that man. So, it's kind of a crazy family scenario. But we all love each other. We all love each other. My daughter's in therapy, and she's a very strong woman. He's shaking his head.
I'm shaking.
Maybe I'm just insane, and I don't even know it yet.
Marky, do you think you're different, or do you think you're pretty much the same person? And this goes back to one of my first questions was sort of, I said it in a cheeky way, that people don't really change.
I'm definitely different than who I was. The industry changes you. It changes your mind. But I will never go back to who I was. But with healing, I mean, I'll be a pretty good version of who I was.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
What do I want to be? I want to be a cat. Katarina. I want to be a trauma counselor along with Kat.
Huh. Can't be a lot of money in this.
It doesn't matter.
There isn't. I mean, there is not a lot of money in this. But I'm not doing it for the money.
Risingangels.net.
Yes.
I bring this up at this particular point in time because from my point of view, if somebody's sitting there with a whole lot of cash burning a hole in their pocket, if they gave it to you, how could they trust that that money would be used wisely? And are you a registered this?
Are we you are registered. We are registered. You can actually go on our website and donate through Canada Helps. My ultimate goal in the end of this is to have a transition home for women that they can stay for up to 2 years, that we can help them learn everything that they need to reintegrate back into society.
Dumb question, but where's the best place for that home? Is there a...
There isn't
Tim's asking where the best place is for the home.
You know what? For me, there is no best place. I would like to see it not obviously right in the city, maybe somewhere a little more rural, but I don't want it to be too far out so that I can get there and I can be there every day to help with these women and hire staff and different kinds of stuff to help them, learn the skills that they need that they've lost along the way because you lose everything.
Somebody said to me the other day, I was at a ceremony thing at the Orangeville Hospital, and they said that Orangeville is a bad area for trafficking. Do you know anything about that?
You know what? If I'm finding out that every city, Brampton, Orangeville, Mississauga, all of them are having huge issues with trafficking and pimping. It's getting out of control. This is the worst that I've ever seen it. And I think that comes with society and the mainstream of media and how our culture is viewing women and pimping is cool and, money is power.
Hmm. I remember years ago, a lady I know started an organization to fight against human trafficking. And she called me up one time and said, "Tomorrow, in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m, are you busy?" I said, "Well, I might be sleeping." She said, "Well, we had about 2 or 3 bodyguards that canceled out on us, and we were, York Regional Police were doing a raid, and they were stealing, taking women out of the sex trade who were trafficked."
Right.
And these were women that were owned by the, I can't remember now, Cambodian mob, I think.
Right, right.
Okay, bad, scary dudes or whatever the thing was. And she said, "All we need is some large guys just to stand near us and with us." And I said, "Okay, I can stand and be a meathead, sure." Later, I thought, "Wait, what you're really asking is for me to be a target."
Yes.
A red dot on the back of my head.
Yeah.
Anyway, it disturbs most people, but unless it kind of gets into their backyard, we don't really care.
Well, I hear so many times, prostitution's a choice and these women are disposable or they're sex addicts or all kinds of stuff. And
you just want the cash.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good cash.
And you know what? It's lack of choice that puts a woman there. It's things that have happened to her to traumatize her that she never got help from that makes her believe that's all she can do. And it's the same story for every single woman that I hear. The girls who are out there, these pros who say, "Oh, no, it's my body. It's my life. I like what I do." I would have said the same thing because that was my normal. normal. And that was my livelihood. And I had nothing else to put on a resume. So I understand that. You know, women don't choose us. If you come from a stable home where you have love and support, education, self-worth is instilled to you, instilled in you, you're not going to wake up one day and say, hey, I want to sleep with a dozen men a day that I don't know for money. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that was really, really well said.
Oh, thank you.
Really well said. Well, I don't normally get, you know, sort of dry mouth when I'm listening to people's stories, but that's just... I'm at an age now where I'm all grandpa-y. By the way, later today, I'm finding out what gender my first grandchild is going to be.
Congratulations.
It's a coming out party? No, what is it again?
A coming out party?
Gender reveal. Sorry. I don't have the terms
right. A coming out party is 16 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Anyway, it's just that protection-y thing that rises up. And probably Tim and I both... I'm really, really sorry that the stuff that has happened to you happened to you on behalf of guys. That's just crappy. But I know guys, and I am one. And also, I'm so intrigued at the faith aspect of this because you do stink of authenticity.
Thank you.
And that's usually a good sign that it's legit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to try really hard not to cross my arms and go, yeah, we'll see. Because that's a jerk move to do. Such a jerk move to do.
That's judgment, right?
You know, I had a guy come on my show a while ago, all tatted up and big dude, and was involved with bikers and murders and all sorts of crazy stories.
I probably know him.
Probably. Yeah. And and then he wrote a book or whatever, and he asked me to endorse the book. And I said, I just can't. I felt like a jerk saying that. But it was like, okay, you've been out of this for a year and a half, two, whatever. It's like... Hold on. Like, there are verses that talk about, okay, even, and people joke about it too, like, new Jesus people should be locked up for 5 years because they're irritating, right? Just irritating. And let's just let things, you know, grow and mature and whatever else. Anyway, okay. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Again, the website, folks, is risingangels.net, risingangels.net. You've been listening to Katarina McLeod. This is her organization, her story, and... Marky, were you nervous?
Yes, today? Very.
You okay now, though?
Yeah, I'm fine, yeah.
Okay. She had to pee really bad.
I have to do that, too. So. A short break on our show, folks, and we have one more guest to chat with. And you've already played this song. You're going to play...
because it's a nice song. Oh,
man, Tim's got it that... what is it? Flock of Seagulls? What's the name of it?
Oh, Tragically Hip.
Tragically Hip.
My favorite band ever.
There you go.
I am so going to go see the poor Gord Downie. I love him.
I know.
I love him.
Stay with us.
Drove back to town this morning with working on my mind.
How are you, Tori? Listen to that voice. You're kind of sweet, aren't you?
Only sometimes.
I've heard. Tori, can you tell the world about something?
Of course I can.
Please.
So maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign. Well, what if we gave you an entire show? The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative and affordable advertising concept for small business owners.
Huh.
With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you an opportunity to partner with us for an entire show.
Say it's not so.
Become a one-day advertising partner and we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show.
That's four times.
And we'll give you a live five-minute phone interview. Oh, and one more thing.
Yes?
We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month.
No!
So, if you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with the Drew Marshall Show.
That's a good idea.
Contact us through our website, drewmarshall.ca, and ask about becoming a one-day advertising partner.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tori the intern on the Drew Marshall Show. Very well done. She gave us a little head snap and a thank you. Well, she just got back from somewhere.